Hello, hello. This is David from the Shonen Flop Podcast. On my show, we usually look at manga flops, but you won't be running into any flops on this show, as you'll be joining the one and only Jeff, aka Podcast Father, on his journey, sharing great things content creators are doing. He's the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the Podcast Father.
Welcome to a bonus episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father. I've got my, well, I think we're kind of becoming good friends. What do you think, Tanner Campbell?
Yeah, I agree with that. We're buddies now.
We're Twitter buddies, BFFs. Anyway, Tanner is here because he has a special project he's been working on. What do the cool kids call it? An application, Tanner? Is that what they call it?
I think the older folks call it an application. The cool kids call it an app. I call it an application.
Well, you're cool with me. So before we get into this, though, because this is going to be a fun conversation because Tanner's trying to do something really cool for the content creation community. Before we jump into that, though, we're going to mention a couple sponsors of this podcast. We have Riverside FM. They're awesome. Everybody, well, I don't want to say everybody. A lot of people are familiar with how good they are. They're your online recording studio. They have really studio quality recording all from your browser. It is good. I've never had any issues. Tanner, are you a Riverside FM fan?
Love Riverside. I've used Zencaster. I've used Squadcast. And Riverside has, in two ways, number one, I like how simple it is for people who are familiar mostly with Zoom. If you try to use some of those other platforms, it's not as they are not as intuitive. They work fine. I don't want to take anything away from them. But if you've got a lower tech person coming on as a guest, it's a nightmare to walk them through the entry screen that you get on those other platforms. And with Riverside, it feels very, these are where these buttons belong. So I know how to do this. I don't need any extra handholding or special attention. And their reliability is insane. I love them.
No, I agree. I think when I've tried some of the other platforms, I've struggled myself at first. You really have to, navigating it is a challenge. You have to really figure out what you're doing. We're on Riverside right now. Every time we've met, we've used it. And I use it for all my recordings, and I'm very satisfied. So I can't recommend it enough. Everybody go to riverside.fm and check it out. You can get a 7-day free trial. You got nothing to lose. Give it a shot. Well, actually, Tanner and I actually share this sponsor. It's Indie Drop-In. I think Tanner's about a week in on this deal right now, and he's had some epic ad reads that he's, I don't even call it an ad read. You've just been doing your thing.
No, man. I don't read anything. As anybody who listens to my show will hear me screw up a lot. I think I should release like a bloopers reel at some point. Maybe I'll do that towards the summer. But no, I try to, advertisements are tough for me because I feel like if I do write anything out, really if I write anything out that's not a story, you know, like a narrative story, I feel like I sound like I'm reading. So I can't do it. So I always have to shoot from the hip. And for Indie Drop-In, I figure I'll do that here. What I say for them is you'd be absolutely out of your mind not to use this, not to use indiedropin.com/creators, because this guy, our buddy, Greg, I can say Greg's name, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Greg does this thing for indie podcasters who are in the horror genre or the spooky, scary genre or the comedy genre, true crime as well, where he will take an entire episode of yours and he will drop it into the feed of, this is where the drop-in name comes from, a podcast in his network, which is already established, already has a good listenership, and will play it as a whole standalone episode. So your episode suddenly gets played to a bunch of people who are already qualified to be interested in the kind of content you're creating. So did I mention it's free? Did I say it's free? Because you would be absolutely out of your mind not to take advantage of that if you're in those genres. I hope that he eventually does it for podcasts about podcasting. So I could get in on that action, but it's amazing, man. And the fact that he allows that to happen for free is just nuts.
I agree. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Like you said, established listeners, and there's an audience there already. They're going to be exposed to your content. It's a great situation, so make sure you check it out. IndieDropIn.com/creators, like you said. Back to the man of the hour, though, yourself, Tanner. We're meeting up again here because you have a project that you've been working on. Actually, I don't even know how long you've been working on it. You've rolled this out pretty fast. I'll let you go from there.
So I've been teaching courses for a couple of years now. Really right before the COVID pandemic, it became apparent to me that I would need another revenue vertical for my own studio business because, you open a recording studio in Maine, of all places, And there's only a limited amount of business you're going to be able to get for in-studio services. And so I started to dabble in course creation. And I had done a lot of online instruction before for previous jobs or positions that I'd held. I actually love educating people. It's something that I, probably because I like to talk so much, I like to get in front of a group of people and help them to understand something that they're not comprehending. Especially the more difficult it is, the more I enjoy it. The more difficult to comprehend it is, the more I enjoy it. And so starting in, I guess it would have been late 2018, mid 2019, somewhere in there, I started creating online courses, and I didn't have massive success with it, but it would bring me a little bit of extra money and again, stand up an additional revenue vertical for my business, which I enjoyed, and that was helpful. And then the pandemic hit, and my entire business as a, you know, in studio services business, a brick and mortar studio, fell back on that small vertical that I had created. And I partnered up with AppSumo.com and some other platforms to offer some exclusive courses to podcasters specifically, because of course, that's my niche. That's what I know the most about outside of IT. And that's what I should be teaching. And the only reason that my brick and mortar studio business did not go bankrupt in the first year of the pandemic was because I had built that very small to begin with courses platform or courses vertical. And that saved me. Now, eventually, the studio couldn't withstand the, you know, the totality of all the negative stuff that comes from COVID. It's hard to have B and A-list celebrities into a studio when you can't do things like offer on-site testing. You can't install an HVAC system. Like, these are all things that various bodies within the entertainment world wanted to make sure that my studio had to keep their talent safe, which is reasonable, but I couldn't keep up with. So I wound up closing that studio, moved to Colorado. I live in Denver now. I think you know this story. But I never stopped enjoying teaching people. And I think that a lot of my presence online that you've interacted with and that probably anybody who's listened to the show has interacted with is usually me teaching in some capacity. In fact, my podcast, Podcasting Sucks, is all about answering questions and teaching. So around Thanksgiving, it got of this just past year, it got into my head that I've got courses in too many places. I've got them in AppSumo. I've got them on Teachable. I've got them in other places that I won't talk about. And they're spread out and they're all at different prices. And some of them are updated with latest stuff and some of them aren't. And this isn't a really good look. And maybe now I've got some time to, you know, the holidays to focus on putting all that in one spot. But then it occurred to me that I can't teach everything and that the only creators in the world, as much as I would like to believe this, are not just podcasters. They're also live streamers, bloggers. They could be vloggers. They could, you know, there's all kinds of online content creation which exists. And I am not a master of all of it, although I consider myself to be knowledgeable across a broad spectrum of it. And so I realized that I would probably need help if I wanted to teach courses that I don't know how to teach. I might need to reach out to people who know those things that I don't know. And then it got into my head that, what if I had my own platform? What if I created a platform that was specifically for content creators? And I did a little bit of a SWOT analysis to see if that existed, to see if there was a platform out there that the entire focus of the platform was just to teach content creators things that content creators need to know in order to be successful as content creators. I couynd't find anything. I mean, I could find things like lynda.com or CBT Nuggets for IT and tech, lynda.com for general knowledge and maybe like photography and stuff. And I could find Skillshare would have a bunch of random stuff on it, but nothing that was specifically aimed at content creators. And so I thought, well, I should do that. I should build a platform like that. And when I thought about what a platform like that should cost, the first thing I thought about was YouTube. And I'm like, well, nobody's going to pay to learn anything from anybody, not if they can just get it on YouTube, right? YouTube's a huge competitor for the educational, I'm going to call it a market, although that's probably not the right term. So how about I don't charge anything for it? And then I thought, well, if I don't charge anything for it, how am I going to justify all the time I'm going to have to spend? Because I'd never built an app before. So all of this is happening like in a very small window of time. I'm trying to figure out what this is going to look like, what we're going to call it, what platforms it's going to launch on. And ultimately, I decided, you know, people tip people on Clubhouse. People tip people on YouTube. What if I made a platform that was free, had experts on it that I could vet, because you know how I feel about people who say they know things that they don't actually know and try to teach and charge people for them. So what if I create a platform that's free to everybody, that has other instructors other than myself on it, that teaches content broadly across the entire creator spectrum for creators so that they can learn what they need to learn to be able to stand up effective businesses or successful podcasts or live streams or whatever it is, to teach those things that you can maybe find on YouTube. But when you find it on YouTube, it's not structured. You got to, you know, go across a couple channels to find a whole big picture view of everything you need to know. That doesn't exist so much on YouTube. You know, there are playlists here and there, but you can never guarantee if the person who's teaching them really knows what they're talking about. And what if all of this is free to the people who would become students of it? And the only way that instructors get paid is if the student elects to tip them electively. They don't have to. They can if they want, like they do on Clubhouse or anywhere else. And so I thought that was a good idea. It was a good start. And then I came up with the name Pisma, which is a Greek word that's used in debate or rhetoric. And what it is it's a strategy for flooding your opponent with so many questions that, and those questions require such detailed answers that the opponent cannot answer them quick enough. So you've kind of overloaded them. And that's what students do, right? Students have a tendency to, when they're new to something, but they want to learn, they'll ask like 600 questions, but all those questions have, you know, they have nuanced answers required and you need time to answer them. So I thought it was a little tongue in cheek, but I thought Pisma would be a good name for the platform. And I just started building it. I had never coded an app before and I wasn't going to attempt to try to learn to code in just a matter of weeks. And so I started looking into no code solutions and I found a platform called Adalo, A-D-A-L-O, which anybody who's interested in building an app, you've got to check this out. Because if you understand relational databases, which I understand in itself is a hard thing to understand, but it's a lot easier to understand than writing code is easy to understand, you can build some really impressive stuff without knowing really a single line of code. And so I started, I want to say, the first week of December, worked through the holiday, and by the last week of December, I had put together a video training platform. I had brought in two friends of mine who I trusted and who I felt were knowledgeable. One of them is Mark Aflalo of SiriusXM. He teaches a course on Adobe Audition, and another is Brandon Ushio, who's about to release a course on creating podcast trailers. So that would be specifically the podcast track. I create courses on Facebook marketing, and I'm actively recruiting new instructors who I trust and have had an opportunity to vet to create content on the platform that I can't create, that Brandon can't create, that Mark can't create, so that by the end of this year, what we're hoping for is to have essentially an Alexandrian library of sorts of different training paths that any creator could come to and get a really good start if they're new or if they're intermediate and trying to get over a hump or trying to learn a new thing, that this is going to be essentially a university for creators, but a free one. And a free one that is not full of ads or paywalls, because there's no ads in this either. The app is 100% free at point of download, and it's free to register as a user. The only thing you have to provide is your username and your email address. That's it. There are no ads inside the app. There will never be ads inside the app. And that got me to the next thing. But I want to give you a second to respond to any of that, because I've been talking for a bit.
Well, I think my big thing was, so you talked about you're going to vet the people that you're recruiting, you're actively recruiting, you're going to vet that process. What does that look like as far as that? Like, what are some requirements, you know, credentials or like, what are you really looking for these instructors that you're going to bring on?
So before I got into podcasting, I had a 20-ish year career in IT. And when you're in IT, especially in a service desk position, which is what I was mostly, I was either a service desk analyst or engineer, or I was a manager of service desk analysts or engineers, you run into a lot of things that you have to solve. For example, it could have been possible, although I can't remember this specifically, but there could have been someone who called in from a doctor's office and said, hey, I got this new microphone to use with my Dragon dictation software, and I got an audio interface device, and I don't know how to set it up. And so as an IT engineer, even though like you're a computer support person, you wouldn't think that that sort of thing was involved in your day-to-day, it could be. And now that I think about it, it probably was more than once. We had a lot of lawyers and doctors who were clients of that of those companies. Anyway, things like that crop up. And as a result of doing that for so long, I have a very broad, I think uniquely broad experience across pretty much anything that touches any kind of technology. So I have the kind of knowledge in live streaming and simulcasting and really podcasting and anything that you could possibly do online, setting up WordPress installation. I've really done, quote unquote, I've done it all. And while I wouldn't consider myself a master of everything, I consider myself a little bit of a jack of all trades, which in the vetting department means that I know what kinds of questions to ask to determine whether or not someone is full of shit. And I think that that is probably the most important part of a vetting process, because anybody can, you know, futz with a resume, or they can make their projects sound grander than they were. And I can ask questions of these individuals who have presented themselves as interested in teaching for Pisma. And I can, you know, I can ask those technical questions and I can get to, okay, you say you've done this. If you have done this, you're going to know how to answer this question. And if you stumble on this question, you might be nervous, but it also might be a telltale sign of you didn't really do that. and the vetting process is important for me, because if people are going to truly really adopt Pisma as a platform for creators, by creators, for creators, and they're really going to accept what I'm claiming I'm trying to do, I cannot allow marketers on that platform, right? Like smooth talking, selling external courses, marketers. I can't allow that to happen. I can't allow someone to use the Pisma name to say, hey, I'm Pisma certified. That's not a thing, but maybe it becomes a thing if they're not, because then that reflects poorly on the brand. It does permanent damage to the brand and it will stop me from being able to do what I'm trying to do. So I'm really going hard at some of these people who have applied, and I know some of the people who've applied personally, but I'm still trying to really run them through their paces, put them through their paces to determine if they're qualified enough by my standards to teach. And I'll admit that my standards are, they're a little firm, but I think that's for the better, right? Like I'd rather have somebody that was a little too qualified than somebody who was even slightly underqualified, I suppose.
I think it, like with anything else, it's when you're putting together something like this, let's just say a team, it's important to, like you said, like I think where you're going, what you're going to say, you've got to have people that are better than you at other things, right? Which is why you brought on a couple people right off the bat that you know personally. And you're going to have to continue to do so as you go through it. Because like you said, jack of all trade, but that does not mean necessarily that your skill sets are in certain areas more than others. You're very technical. You know a lot about different things, but you're going to have to really put a good team together to do this. You say no marketing, you don't mean that. And like, you're not saying that, hey, this platform's just going to be about the editing process and stuff like that. There's going to be a lot more to it than that, right?
Well, there also will be. So I said no marketers. What I meant there is I don't want any marketing to occur in a course. But if it is a course on marketing, then of course, those people would be vetted. And we're working on a document right now. And we're specifically at that part where we're talking about in-course promotion of external services. And what I ran into in the last couple of weeks of December was like, okay, look, you're asking these people to, with considerable knowledge, to take some of their time to create something for free to the benefit of this platform and a bunch of strangers that they don't know. So there has to be something in it for them, which is where the tipping idea came from. But I think there needs to be something more in it for the instructors as well. And I wanted to be very careful about that because it could have really screwed everything up if I did it wrong. And I guess I won't know if I've done it wrong, but I'm going to say it here and your listeners maybe will be able to tell me if I've done it wrong. But I don't want any paywalls in between the students and the actual learning material. What I thought would be useful to instructors was, well, if they could build a following on the platform, that could be monetarily valuable to them as instructors, and that might be a good trade-off for their time. But how are they going to do that if they're not charging on the platform? Certainly the elective tips will help, but you know conversion rates on those kinds of things. Like if there's 100 people watch your show, maybe 3 or 4 of them are going to tip you, and who knows how much they would tip you.
If that, right?
Yeah, right. Certainly not enough to earn a living off of. So what else could I do that would give instructors money but wouldn't get in the way of students enjoying a free and good platform for learning? And so I thought, well, what if I create like Pisma Plus? I think I called it something else initially, but I thought, okay, well, what would be included in that? We're already giving away the most important content. What would like support that? And I thought, well, how about access to the instructors? So right now you can watch the videos, you can leave comments below, you can download the, if there is any, the associated course materials. So if somebody has a PDF or a cheat sheet or something with one of their courses, you can just click it and download it right there in the app, and all that's free. So I thought, well, what else is valuable? And I thought, well, access is valuable. What if there was a way for the students to have one-on-one interaction with the instructors? And I thought, okay, well, I want to be careful with that because one-on-one interaction with the instructors would get very expensive as far as hours were concerned for the instructor. And I don't want to ask them to just, endlessly volunteer their time. I said, okay, so what's another kind of access they could get? Well, how about in-app chat? So if you have a question for an instructor as a free user, you can leave a comment and the instructor can get back to you in the comments when and if they do. But if you're a Pisma Plus user, then you get access to in-app chat between you and whatever instructor whose courses you're taking are. So you could talk with them directly. I thought, okay, well, that's nice, but that's probably not enough to charge any significant money for somebody to turn them from a free student into a paying student. So what else could I give them? And this is where I really went off the rails. I thought, well, I'm already developing an app. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, so I might as well make this even harder for myself than it's already been. Why don't we do a Clubhouse clone within the app, and I could have private tutoring sessions that an instructor would agree to participate in X times a month for a certain amount of money that would be collected by anybody who was joining Pisma Plus for their courses. So what I think I'm doing is, and then there's also an in-app podcast that will feature audits of, if you're a free student, you might be approached by the platform to say, hey, we'd like to give you a free audit from your live stream or your podcast or whatever it is you're doing. No charge to you. Just come on our podcast, send us some materials. We'll do a full formal audit for you. No charge. The catch is that that audit becomes content for the in-app podcast that only Pisma Plus users will be able to hear. So it's a way of generating content and giving benefit to the person who's helping us generate content without putting up any paywalls. So essentially, if you become a paid user, you can interact directly with instructors via chat. You can attend private audio streams, live audio streams like you would in Clubhouse, in-app with the instructors for whose courses you're registered. And you would have access to sitting through and listening to audits of various types of creators, maybe for your own benefit. And I thought, okay, that's pretty good. And then I put together a small brain trust of people who are creators themselves. And I thought, well, what is this worth? And how am I going to charge it? Is this a monthly thing? Is it an annual thing? And pretty much everybody came back and said, annual's too much, especially if what you're trying to do is attract beginners or intermediate people. Like intermediates and newbies don't have a lot of money to spend on something like this. So to pay for an annual subscription is, that's probably expecting too much. And so I said, well, I like that because somebody might come to the course, might come to the platform to take five courses and, you know, then they're gone. Maybe they're never there again. Maybe they just come and learn what they want to learn. They want to get that one-on-one with one instructor, and I want them to be able to turn off their subscription. So what is this worth? And right now, while this has not yet been rolled out, this is probably going to be rolled out in quarter two of this year, I'm thinking that that Pisma Plus costs $99, $99.99 because it's on Apple and everything has to end in 99, $99.99 for a month, terminatable whenever you like. And that gives you access to all those Pisma Plus features, which are actually currently already built out. But I'm having a massive struggle with Apple's approval process because they are very particular about how things happen in their apps, which is probably great for users, but it's maddening for me who's never been through the process before.
They're not very particular with my kids' games that are so easy for them to just spend money on. I'll tell you that much. But
oh, no, they love for it to be easy to spend money. What they don't love. So I'll give an example. I wanted to do the in-app tipping for the instructors. I wanted the instructors to get the bulk of that tip. If you're on Clubhouse, for example, you can tip someone on stage and they get 100% of the tip. And that's because they're doing the tipping through Stripe. And Stripe has a special deal with Clubhouse where they won't, where they're not going to charge a platform fee or something like that. So it's a one-to-one relationship between Stripe and Clubhouse. It's a special deal. I can't get that deal. I'm not cool. I'm not Clubhouse cool. But if you're a regular old me, you have to use what's called in-app tipping or in-app purchases, IAP. The problem with IAP is that it takes 30%. Unless you can prove to Apple you don't make $1 million a year, which I clearly don't make $1 million a year. So people who tip on the app will be forced to pay, you know, they're going to tip their $4.99, for example, is the lowest tip you can give somebody because it's pretty much $5 and that's a nice tip. But 15% of that is going to go to Apple and I can't avoid it because the only way I can use Stripe in platform is if the content is live. That's the catch. And I can't, at least I don't foresee a way that I would have instructors volunteering their time. And I'd say, be there Thursday at 7 p.m. That I think is asking a little too much, but maybe we'll get there. So right now the tipping is unfortunately 15% of it goes to Apple, but I can't do anything about that. However, the Android version that's coming out, that might be different. I don't know how Android's in-app purchases work yet or what percentages they take. We may find that more money goes to the instructors when it's through an Android user as opposed to an Apple user. That version, by the way, is done and will be out before quarter two, before the end of February of this year. I just couldn't handle launching both versions at the same time. It was too stressful.
That was my next question. I'm an Android guy, so you answered it. You're ahead of me there. Appreciate that.
Well, it was important to me that I developed them side by side because I remember when Clubhouse came out that people waited so long for Android users. They waited like a year and a half, I think, to get on. And I didn't want that. Plus, I know that a lot of creators are, of course, half of them probably are Android users. I don't want to ostracize them. So they have been developed right next to each other as I've gone forward. Of course, the submission process is really the only thing that's left. And I think the submission process for Google, it's already proved to be a little bit more involved and it's already proved to be a little bit technically different. There are things that I have had to do for Google that I didn't have to do for Apple, probably because Apple's such a closed system and Google includes more openness to its platform. So it's more complicated for me as I get to call myself a developer now, although that's not really true.
Just business speaking wise, business question here. Funding it wise, are you having to pour into a bunch of your money off this off the bat? And how much, I don't want to set a timeline because that's like really rough, but how much are you prepared to invest, you know, in your, from yourself? I mean, that's what you're going to do. You have to do it first.
Yeah. So the first speed bump is the cost of the platform upon which I am developing it. These are not big costs, right? To become a Apple developer, I think I had to pay $100. And to become a Google developer, to just get these accounts, I think I had to pay like 30. It was not a lot. It was less than $200 for both of those. And that's a annual cost, so not that expensive. I was happy to eat that. And then the platform that I build on Adalo cost me $50 a month. Again, not huge overhead. The overhead here is, you know, anybody who's ever started a business before knows that the most expensive thing is your own labor, and you pay yourself $1 an hour. So it's free. There's no investment whatsoever. That's what it feels like. But of course, there's a lot of hours. I've probably put, I don't know, maybe south of 150 hours into this thus far. I stay up late. It becomes like this obsessive thing. I want to solve a problem tonight. I don't want to sit on it until tomorrow morning. But then inevitably, I go to bed frustrated, wake up in the morning with a clear head and solve it in 5 seconds. So I should probably do that less. But there's not a lot of operating cost for it right now, other than my time. I mean, my hourly rate in some of my consulting is $130 an hour. So we could say that I've put, you know, 150 times 130 worth of dollars into this, but I don't really think that's realistic. I do value my own time. Of course, I've been an entrepreneur for a long time, but I don't think I'm going to convince anybody that, you know, I should be being paid for trying to develop this thing. This is not how it works. It has to be successful before anybody's going to pay you for it. But my hope is that I can get the attention of some kind of investor to help me take this from, because what it is right now is it's essentially masterclass.com. You're familiar with that, without the celebrity. And that's not a great model. I don't have any celebrities. So what sets this platform apart is that it's a place that instructors can build who are experts in what they already do, but have never considered the fact that that might be an entire business for them. So they're approaching it in reverse. A lot of people who approach online courses are like, ooh, I can make money this way. Let's solve the money-making part, and then I'll get good. Whereas what I'm hoping this platform will do on the instructor side is attract already skilled, talented, and established instructors and allow them to build a new kind of business, so which I think is the correct way to do it. And as far as the student side, I think that there's some kind of benefit to attracting a large audience. I don't know what that is. I've never sold a SaaS product. I don't even know if that's what this is would be considered. I've never built a platform that has, you know, like 10,000 or a million users on it. So I've never gone down that road before. But I think with a product like this, there's the potential that someone is interested in something about it enough to give me the kind of money I might need to take it from this. I don't want to make it sound like this is I'm going to say minimally viable product, because I built it myself on a no-code platform, but you haven't been on the platform yet, have you? Have you used the web view of it?
And not yet. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, okay, good. So it's probably because I haven't told you, but if you go to app.pismaapp.com, you can use it in browser. You can do that. It's a little bit of a strange experience because it's, you know, it's modeled within a phone device. So it's like a very small screen, but you can explore it as an Android user on the web as we wait for the Android version to get rolled out. But my hope is I could take it from that done myself, minimal viable product, to hiring some developers to really flesh this out to be something that works very smoothly, has all the bells and whistles, has all the benefits and polish that an app that has real developers working on it actually does. But my first and foremost goal is just, I want to know that this is something that the community wants, is something that benefits the community that I imagine it in the way that I imagine it will, and that I can get enough instructors together to make those things possible. So I think I have, you know, I probably have a year's worth of work to do before this is something that I could even go to somebody and say, hey, I've got a really good thing here. This is what it does. I'd like to make it better. Would you invest in this? Or I could bootstrap it myself. Who knows?
I do think, though, that those people that do sign up in the beginning, it's going to be a special group of people. I'm talking the content creators that get on board and support you.
Yeah, well, right now we have over 200 early adopters thus far, which I think is amazing because we're only available to iOS right now, and we've only really been released on the app. Like, I've been doing this in test flight in beta since the beginning of December, but It has only been available on the App Store for, I want to say, since the 5th of January or maybe the 3rd of January. And to already have a couple hundred users who have signed up, of course, it's free. So I don't know what kind of success that communicates, but it communicates some kind of success. And I'm pretty excited about it. I'm also, I didn't mention this, but while I onboard new instructors, I'm planning on onboarding a couple a month. I'm adding a new course every week. So we started with a compression course and an equalization course and a Facebook marketing course. Just today, I released a course on expanders and gates. Of course, my specialty is audio and audio engineering, so a lot of my stuff is going to revolve around that, or paid marketing and paid social, which is something I specialize in as well. But I am driving at least 52 new courses to this platform between now and the end of the year, because I'm going to do one every week. And that will be in addition to whatever additional instructors I can get in to create content that I can't create, because those things are not my specialty. So we'll see at the end of this year. I think is going to be the time I make the decision of whether or not this was a success. And it's giving early signs as if it will be. I think I'm doing some things right. And I have gotten a lot of positive feedback from the people who've been in it. And everybody right now is, they're so willing to say, oh, this thing on this page, just it's wrong. There's like an overlap of text. And they don't go and one star the app in the app store. Instead, they tell me, like, they submit feedback within the app. And that's been huge, because my goal here really isn't, my primary goal is not to make a ton of money. It's to make a really good product, because if I am going to make a ton of money, that is not going to happen until it's a really good product. And so I'm very thankful to the people who are part of it so far and are helping me to make it better. It's very cool. It's a cool experience and the first time for me.
You invited me on board. You're going to pay me in stock. So we'll be getting paid for a while.
Yeah, that's right. yeah, for sure. You can have stock. You can't yell at me if that stock never becomes worth anything, though.
What about web? You know, us content creators, we spend a lot of time on the actual web version. Is that something that's obviously you have to see how things go. I understand that. But I know that I worked with a social audio app earlier this year, and that's one of the biggest feedback that I, you know, how when you're working with somebody, it gets directed through you too. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the biggest things I heard as far as feedback, you know, web version, especially for podcasters, content creators.
It's actually already done. It's the same. It's along in the same way as the iOS app has been. The iOS thing, I don't know why, for whatever reason, I guess I'm a rookie developer, right? I'm using no code. I perceived iOS to be the most important. I think maybe a lot of developers do that, and maybe I'm guilty of falling in line with that. But at the same time, I have been developing the Android and the web version at the same time, so that I feel like iOS is the testing ground for me. Once I can get that polished enough, I can release the Android version, and then I can polish up the web version. But both of those really are already functionally as far along as the iOS version. They're just not released on those platforms yet. I could turn web on tomorrow, but I'd be afraid it would be an absolute disaster, because there's so much different. There are other considerations because most people's screens are large. This whole thing is, of course, responsive. If you look at it on a tablet, for example, on an iOS tablet, it works. If you look at it on a phone, various kinds of iPhones, it works. You turn it sideways, it works. But a monitor is like my monitor is 26 inches wide right now. And this app looks very funny at that form factor, because it's like there's a video and there's a little bit of text and then there are some small comments. And it's weird if you stretch, what is two paragraphs on a phone to being a single line of text across the entirety of your screen. So I'm just solving for some of those visual differences, but the functionality is already there.
There's a lot of people charging money for advice on podcasting, audio, content creation. What, at the end of the day, would you say is different from you? I know you've touched up on some of it, but at the end of the day, what is different for you? Is it your intentions behind it?
Ooh, that's tough, because I feel like that puts me in a position to say not nice things about people who might be trying really hard.
We've already done that. We don't need...
Yeah, we've already done that. But there are a lot of people out there who I think are in financially difficult positions where they cannot afford to just do things for free. And they're scrambling to find a way to make this living in this thing, and they're on a timeline. I am not on that timeline. And so I think I need to recognize that first before I respond to this question, because I really don't want to be, I don't want to be shitty to anybody. I think there are some people out there who, and I won't name them. Well, like for example, well, I will name one, because I'm going to name her positively. Arielle Nissenblatt, I think, is a person who her heart is 100% in the right place. And not uncoincidentally, she works for Squadcast, so she's got a job sorted, right? She doesn't need to be a talking head in order to make a living. It's not contingent upon that success. She's already got her bills handled. I mean, I'm making some assumptions here, but I'm sure she does. I know that her heart's in the right place. There are a lot of other people out there who are giving advice who's, I don't feel like, I just don't see it. And I worry that, and we talked about this a little bit on the last time I was on the show, I worry that newbies especially don't see the telltale signs of when somebody doesn't actually have the information that they're maybe paying them to get. And I want this platform to protect people from that. I also realize that a platform that has true experts on it is going to pull the rug out from people who are experts and who are trying to make a living that way. They're going to say, well, why would I pay you? Pisma's right here and it's free. I understand that that's going to be some fallout. Unfortunately, I think that my greater mission, which is to protect new creators and to give them good information so that they can be successful, I think that my drive to do that is just more important to me than protecting the livelihoods of people I don't know who are very few in number who are making money doing courses. Because people who I find selling courses online, like 8 times out of 10, I think they're charlatans, man. They're not, and they're charging so much money. And they have the most ridiculous justifications for charging so much money that I just feel like that's cool for you, but I don't think you're good for the, you know, for the, let's say the creator environment specific to me, but I don't think you're good for the online learning environment. Everything else in our day and age has become democratized as far as access is concerned. I mean, you don't see anybody paying like $600 a month for access to anything anymore. You don't see anybody saying, well, I'm going to gatekeep this content and you can't have it unless you get money. Like that's very rare. And I feel like the only place where it's not very rare is with online, not online learning writ large, but online learning, which is curriculum based and more structured. Like if you want a structured environment, we can provide that on Pisma. But I feel like if you try to get it anywhere else with course materials and like an actual curriculum and all these other supportive things that come with, you know, with didactic classroom learning, you're paying money for that. And I think that maybe you shouldn't.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I do think it's important because it really is such a big challenge when you start out. We'll talk about after this part, we'll talk about how you're going to reach out to the new people. But how are you going to adapt to where they are at as far as their knowledge? Because I think it's important if you're going to do this, what's going to make it stand out for you is your hands-on approach. Everybody has a different skill set. And everybody has a different way of learning, speed of learning, everything like that. To me, it seems like a big selling point with this app is going to be, one, how personally involved you are, then two, how hands-on involved you are, and then how the instructors that you bring on come into play. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the two things that are going to set Pisma apart from our biggest competitor, which would be YouTube, which is any live streaming or any educational platform's biggest competitor, is going to be YouTube because it's free and it's massive and you can find anything you want on there. I think the two most important things are going to be how personable the relationship is between the student and the teachers, how truly supported they feel, which you cannot get on YouTube, right? YouTube's a place you go to get an answer. You've got your answer. You leave. If you want to talk to that creator, good luck. They've got a million, you know, subscribers or something. They're not going to give you any attention. That's going to be important early on. And it will be maintainable early on because there won't be that many users. There won't be that many requests. But of course, that's a scale problem later. That'll need to be addressed in some way. I'll have to figure that out. I don't have that answer yet. And then the other thing is how similar the content is, at least this is my opinion, from instructor to instructor. So something that I'm building right now is a document that essentially says, hey, look, if you're an instructor here, here is how the courses have to be delivered. Number one, and this isn't finalized yet, so take it with a grain of salt. Number one, we don't want any fancy animations in the course. We don't want like fancy like screen transitions or anything like that. We don't want little spinning logos. We no personal branding. Maybe your name in the lower thirds, a little animation that could come in and then in 5 seconds it disappears so people get your name. Maybe you can put something on the screen that you are talking about, like that kind of thing would be okay. No personal branding, no external calls to action, and either you are presenting a PowerPoint presentation or you're sharing your screen or you're speaking to the camera directly. If it's not those things, then that's not what we want in the courses. We want the courses to focus on the educational content, and I want that consistency to exist across instructors. And then maybe at the end, we'd allow them to do some kind of call to action, like at the end of the entire course, hey, thanks for taking this course. By the way, if you'd like to get to know more about me, you can go to myprivatewebsite.com or whatever and learn more about me. So I think that personability is hugely important for it taking off early, and I think that that consistency across experience and making sure that that format, whatever we arrive on, doesn't feel cheesy or markety. Like, I'm very sensitive to that. I don't want anybody to feel like they're being sold to on the platform. I think that's probably the second most important thing.
I think there's definitely like a happy middle you have to find with the instructors and then the students. We'll say students. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's going to have to be focused on the students. And I think anybody who truly a good instructor will understand and realize that.
Well, I also think that once the user base is large enough, like let's say we've got 10,000 users, the value proposition for an instructor really changes, because if you've got a platform with 10,000 users and I'm inviting an instructor to teach a course on it, that is a really good reason for that instructor to do a really good job, because the instructor can have a business external to Pisma. And if they're sitting in front of 10,000 students, maybe 2,500 of which would like to take their course, which is free, that's a level of exposure for that instructor that it's a one-off. They're only creating one course. I'm not saying you have to create a course every week the way that I am, but there's an incentive then, once the user base is large enough, for them to say, yeah, you know what? I will create a 10-video series on XYZ, and I will do it for free or for tips that I might get, because I think as a marketing move for me, myself, and my private business, I think that's a smart move. I think that's what it will eventually become, so long as the user base grows, which I have every confidence it will, because it's free and it's hard to say no to free so long as the content doesn't suck, which I'm working to ensure it doesn't.
Last question for you. How are you going to focus and try to bring in newbie podcasters, let's say? What strategies do you have there, and what's your plan?
So my podcast, Podcasting Sucks, is serving as at least in these very early weeks, as a way of attracting a lot of new users. So that's the way I've started. But the way that I intend to move forward is the way that I intend to move forward with anything that I advertise, and that is to start with paid social. I'll do a lot of Facebook ads targeted at certain demographics that I believe would be interested in a platform like this. I'm going to have to stay niched to podcasting, because right now the only instructors on the platform are podcasting audio centric. So we're going to start there, and then we'll broaden out as we add more instructors of different modalities or disciplines to the platform, and that'll get better. But so I'll do a lot of what I already do, creating free content as a podcaster, engaging on Twitter, inviting when I can or referring when I can people to a course which exists on the platform, which is free and which answers the question they're asking. So a lot of that organic approach, and a good amount of the paid approach, which I preach all the time, and you're probably tired of hearing, but probably 50-50 or 60-40. I'll probably start 60% organic and then eventually be half and half.
You paid me $600,000 for this episode, so.
I did. I'm broke now. I won't be able to pay my mortgage.
No, I'm glad to help you, though, and I think it's going to be awesome. Wrap things up here. Let's tell the listeners where to find everything you're doing, and then once again, go over the details of where to find the app.
So right now, if you are on Apple iOS, you can go to the Apple App Store, and you can just search Pisma, P-Y-S-M-A. And there are actually, oddly, two results for that. One is Pisma Politics. That's not me. And the other one is just Pisma. That's me. It's yellow. You can't miss it. Go ahead and download it for free. Register for free. Right now, the ways that you can register, you can log in with your Gmail address, or you could log in with your Apple ID. There will be additional ways to log in the future to create an account as I add like social logins and other things. But right now, your Gmail account or an Apple ID, that's how people log in and sign up. If you are not an iOS user and you want to take this for a spin, right now you can go to app.pismaapp.com and you can sign up in the same way. The app runs in kind of like an iPhone portal on that page so that you can interact with it and you can get a feel for it, and you can create a real user account and still absorb all the content. You just have to kind of do it in this tiny little screen that is, you know, not as cool as the actual app, but that's a way you can interact if you're an Android user. Otherwise, you can go to pismaapp.com and get any other information you want out of me or out of the website and learn about Pisma. I'd love to have you as a user.
I appreciate you taking the time to come by and share this with me, man, and all the listeners. I think it's going to be fun. Are you excited? You look sleepy. You're killing yourself, man.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. I mean, I have a couple people whose eyes go wide when I say I'm going to create a course every week. They're like, that is quite a workload. That's going to take a lot of time. Fortunately for me, I'm pretty efficient at that, and I know how to part out large topics into single standalone topics. So it's a little bit more approachable to me. But, you know, if you believe in something, maybe this isn't everybody's view, but it's mine. If you believe in something, you suffer for it. You know, that's what you have to do in the upfront. There's no business I've ever started, whether it's been successful or a failure, where I haven't had to put in a completely unbalanced amount of work up front. And some of those failed, some of them were successful, but the one thing they had in common was you had to bust your ass at the outset or you were never going to find out whether or not it was going to be successful or not. And it's the same with this. So I am tired. It is a lot of work, but I believe in it. And hopefully some of your listeners have been convinced to believe in it as well. And we'll check it out. And thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all, man. And I do encourage everybody to check it out. Appreciate everybody listening to a little bit of bonus content here, bringing my buddy on and giving him the opportunity to present this awesome thing he's working on. You can always check out everything else that I've got going on at my website, podcastfather.com. And until next time, and until the next episode, take care of yourself.